Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, this is Adrenaline Realms Thriller Channel. I'm your host, Neil Heligers, and this is False Idols, Episode 8. Enjoy.
Back in her apartment, her brain tired from all the translating she'd done, Layla allowed herself the simple luxury of a takeout meal and a generous glass of white wine. She sat on the divan, sipped her wine, and watched the feluccas with their crisp white sails scudding down the Nile. Then she shifted her gaze and saw the almost accusatory glare of the bronze cat Bennett had sold her. She placed it in the center of a small floating shelf near the window. Or, at least, she was pretty sure that was where she'd put it. Now it was toward the end of the shelf, and facing a different direction. She set the wine down, and rose to look more closely at the statuette. If there were cleaning people coming to the apartment, she could see how the cat might have been moved for dusting and not replaced exactly where it was. But Pierce hadn't ordered a cleaning service for her. That was too risky. A chill ran through her. Had someone been in the apartment? What else was awry? She ran to her bedroom and opened the bottom nightstand drawer. Breathing fast, she pulled out a box with an image of a sleep mask on it. It felt reassuringly heavy. Inside, beneath the lavender eye bag, the Glock 22 gleamed in the light. She breathed a long sigh of relief and replaced it. Still, something unsettled her as she leaned against the nightstand and looked around the room. The scent in the air. Was it the sandalwood room spray she'd bought? Or someone else's cologne? Now she couldn't be sure. She moved from room to room, looking for more objects out of place. Footprints in the plush carpet, stray hairs in the bathroom. She found nothing. Paranoid, she decided. This undercover gig was getting to her. Frowning, Layla moved the bronze cat back to the center of the shelf. Pierce had grudgingly doled out cash for the purchase before Layla left for Lake Como. Next time, ask me before you splurge. This puts me in an awkward position with Monahan. Layla had felt like a kid who'd run through her allowance. Pierce must have recognized that, because she'd added, in a kinder voice, I do admire your balls in trying to buy something illicit from Bennett. Just hold off for now. We don't want to freak him out. At least Pierce had been pleased with the outcome of the Lake Como trip, Layla reflected, stepping backward to check her new positioning of the cat. The two vases Tanaka had bought from Bennett were in the clear, but some of the items he'd bought from Farwadi had suspicious dates, so Pierce was digging deeper. Layla suddenly remembered the article she'd found in Tanaka's nightstand and photographed on her phone. The Amulet Men of Fayum. In the days of the party that had followed her snooping around, she'd almost forgotten about it. As the sun slowly set over the Nile, she read Dr. Catherine Danforth's article about a collection of amulets in a Fayum museum, which were believed to have magical powers. It was interesting, but the pictures were small or cut off in the photo she'd taken so quickly, and part of the article text was blurred. Or maybe it was the wine. She was onto her second generous glass. She glanced up at the cat on the shelf. She could practically hear the hiss and yowl of the feral cats in her old neighborhood. She got up and moved the statuette to a closet shelf down by the floor. She went back out to the living room couch and turned on the TV. She flipped through channels, filling the room with the conversations of strangers. Egyptian period dramas, game shows, Seinfeld reruns translated into Arabic, until she fell asleep. All the ingredients were there for a romantic lunch. A cozy sidewalk cafe table on the sun-splashed south side of Tahrir Square. Egyptian pop music pulsing from a speaker. Platters of rice and kebabs, fizzy lemon drinks. James sitting opposite her on a rare hour-long lunch break. The only thing marring the scene was James's mood, which was unusually downcast. Trying to lift his spirits, Layla commented on the antics of the cute child approaching them now with a tray of trinkets for sale.
"No, don't buy anything,"
said James, as she reached for her wallet. He made a shooing motion with his hand, which triggered a flare of rage in Layla. The child turned to go, but Layla beckoned her back and looked at the tray of wares.
"Scarab amulets are all the rage," she said, holding her new purchase out to James. "Haven't you heard?"
"You do know it's entirely fake."
"Of course, it's plastic. But in a dark nightclub, no one would be the wiser, right?"
She slipped it around her neck.
"Let me see."
James inspected it, turning it over and over in his practiced hand.
"Not plastic. This one's a notch better. For a fake, you got a good deal."
"Not plastic?"
"It's bone."
He tapped it.
"Old bone. They feed this to turkeys. The gastric juices create an aging effect that can look pretty realistic."
James released the amulet and stirred the ice in his drink, staring into space.
"What's on your mind?"
Layla asked.
"Seems like it's been such a good week for business. Your dad seems happy. Why aren't you?"
James sighed.
"Yeah, we had a lot of foot traffic and sales this week. But it doesn't cover what my dad needs right now to keep certain people happy."
Layla put a hand over his. She was genuinely worried about James. She'd never seen him look so distraught. "Get out while you're ahead." James's missent text to his dad floated back to her. In what circumstances should a person quit something while they're ahead? She shivered as the pieces came together in her mind. Gambling. She thought of the Cairo Zoom image of Bennett at the casino. Bennett wasn't just looking for a quick win to solve a financial issue. He had a problem. She sat up straighter.
"Your dad gambles, doesn't he?"
James looked startled.
"What? No."
"James, I saw his picture on Cairo Zoom."
She pulled out her phone and showed him. James blew out a long breath.
"Great. Now the whole world knows."
"I don't think so," said Layla. "The picture is not focused on him, and people who read this don't care."
"But I do. What's up with your dad?" James sighed.
"His buying trips are mostly gambling trips. While you were in Geneva, he was in Monte Carlo, pissing away money. And while you were in Lake Como, he was at the Omar Khayyam Casino. That place is open 24 hours, and I don't think he slept. Now he's off to the new casino in Dubai. And that's why I couldn't text you much while you were away on your trips,"
he added.
"I was trying to run things here and also talk some sense into him."
"So that's what the text was about? The one you accidentally sent me?"
"Yeah. He said he was on a winning streak. I wanted him out before he lost it all."
"Did it work?"
The look on his face said it all.
"He's losing money faster than he can make it. It's funny. I repair things all day, but this is one thing I can't seem to fix."
James slouched in his chair, one jeans-clad leg crossed over the other, his foot twitching.
"Absolutely no one can know about this," he added. "Seriously, it would break him."
"No one will know," Layla promised. James squeezed her hand.
If I can't always respond to texts or calls right away, now you'll know why, he said. I know people say I'm this crazy workaholic, and I do work hard, but a lot of my work is covering for my dad. It's like a secret life.
I get it. Layla squeezed his hand back and looked deep into his eyes. I really do get it. When Layla let herself into the safe house, she found Pierce finishing up with a phone call in one of the safe house bedrooms, with Monahan, Layla guessed, judging by the agitated quality in Pierce's voice.
That's fair market value, Pierce was insisting. Not only that, the dealer dropped the price.
Layla cringed, hoping this wasn't about the bronze cat, yet certain it was. Pierce poked her head around the bedroom door and signaled to Layla to have a seat in the living room. Then she shut the bedroom door and continued talking, though her words were now muffled. Layla removed her hijab and went to the kitchen looking for a cold beverage. Funny how the safe house was beginning to feel like her second home, even though it lacked all the luxuries of her Garden City penthouse. Especially today. All that was in the fridge was a bottle of diet soda and a packet of dried figs. She helped herself to some water in a dusty glass. As she drank the water, she looked out at the neighborhood of modest brick apartments encrusted with satellite dishes, and wondered if Pierce was too busy with her end of the investigation to go out and get groceries. After using the bathroom, she wiped her hands on a towel with a hedgehog design on the border. She smiled. She'd also glimpsed a hedgehog coffee mug in the kitchen and hedgehog socks outside the bedroom door. No doubt Pierce, if confronted, would hotly deny having any type of hedgehog collection. But the hedgehogs were hints of her inner life. Tempting as it was, Layla decided not to tease her. The hedgehog hand towel was clean, but the rest of the bathroom was definitely overdue for a cleaning. Housekeeping services didn't come to a safe house, and Pierce's cleaning abilities seemed to be about on par with Layla's cooking. Layla opened the drawers beneath the sink, wondering if Pierce even had any cleaning products. She could leave out some bleach as a hint. All she found were four cardboard boxes from Amazon stored beneath the sink. The open one contained only cotton balls. Hearing Pierce exit the bedroom, she hurried to the living room to join her. Still fired up from that phone call, Pierce was in full business mode, a clipboard and pen in hand, a focused expression on her face as she stood before the whiteboards.
I'll go first today. Okay, so this Dr. Al-Sayed you found in Noor Ghaffar's files?
We've looked into him.
You were right. A fraud.
Layla sat on the couch.
I knew it.
Yep. In fact, he appraised 3 of the 15 relics you found at the Tanaka Villa, only Farwadi never passed those documents on to Tanaka. He thought better of it.
Farwadi knows Dr. Al-Sayed?
Pierce nodded.
According to Farwadi, this Al-Sayed is, or was, a legitimate scholar, but he's a sellout. His opinion can be bought. Apparently so many dealers have purchased it lately, he's gone dark for a while. I don't expect you'll get any response to your email query. But we should keep an eye out for his name and follow up on what Noor had him appraise.
She scribbled something on a sticky note and slapped it onto Noor's picture on the whiteboard. Then she pointed at various photos, as if deep in thought, and stopped when her pen hit Bennett's.
What's new at the Rothkopf Gallery?
Layla shared what she had learned about Bennett's gambling habit. Her words faltered when she saw Pierce was not taking notes.
And this is useful information because...
Layla threw up her hands in exasperation.
Isn't it obvious? She said. Depending on who he owes money to or what thugs he might have pissed off in the casino circuit, we have a motive for him to get involved in the illegal antiquities trade. I think he's in even deeper than we first thought.
Pierce tipped her head to one side, studying Layla.
Yes, she said. Sure, a gambling habit might make him more vulnerable to us. But we aren't looking for Bennett Rothkopf's motive. We're looking for middlemen and suppliers so we can follow the money trail back to the Muharib.
Layla hadn't expected to be shot down so fast.
You think finding all this out was a waste of time? I do.
Pierce shrugged.
It's interesting trivia, but it's irrelevant. How often does he move his inventory among his various galleries? Who brings him new acquisitions? Have you witnessed any?
Layla shook her head.
Not yet. But don't you think if we understand how badly he's in debt, or who he might owe money to, or who he has to keep happy, we can find some of his associates?
Pierce waved Layla's comment aside.
What are the shipping companies Bennett uses to transport his goods to his clients?
Layla looked down at her lap, embarrassed that she had no answers. So far, she'd logged 20 hours in the gallery, hanging on Bennett's every word as he described the ins and outs of the business. But she now realized he'd talked in very abstract terms. He held his cards close to his chest, not revealing any names or companies, the very information she'd needed. And when she did work there, despite her best intentions of breaking free to snoop around, he'd kept her on a tight rein. Mackie was always present too, always just around the corner, restricting any opportunities to snoop in the offices.
If you're going to stay on at the Rothkopf Gallery, you've got to do more. Get access to the computer system, work the IT guy you mentioned, look for shipping labels and manifests, and look for loose papers. Off-book dealers often prefer old accounting methods, easier to destroy.
Layla nodded.
I'm on it. Sounds like James is really opening up with you, by the way,
said Pierce, tilting her head in the other direction.
That's nice. What do we know about him, anyway, other than he's covering for Dad's little habit?
Layla tried to brush aside the memory of James's lips on hers.
He does restoration work. He's in his studio a lot. He's not involved in the buying and selling.
Keep the gentle pressure on him. He may reveal more about his dad in good time,
Pierce advised. The harshness was gone from her voice now.
I'll do that,
Layla promised, though inwardly she squirmed. It was one thing to decide on her own in the moment to work on James for information. It felt entirely different to do so at Pierce's command. A slight smile further softened the hard lines of Pierce's angular face.
By the way, I noticed he's pretty easy on the eyes. Try not to get distracted, will you?
Layla scoffed, as if the very idea was ridiculous.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Layla took the steps to the Rothkopf Gallery slowly, rehearsing her plan. She was arriving deliberately early. Bennett was at the consulate to see about his visa for Dubai. James was at the Ministry of Antiquities to get travel documents. Hamadi, the IT guy, was taking a rare day off to take his sick mother to the hospital. That left only one person standing in between her and Bennett's office, Mackie. She took a deep breath and rang the buzzer. There was no room for error if she was going to pull this off. Mackie opened the gallery door and looked at her in surprise. Then he narrowed his eyes and scrutinized her closely. He loomed over her, his body seeming to take up the entire doorframe. "Morning, Mackie," she said, in the most cheerful voice she could muster. "We are not open yet. There is no client expected until 10, he said. "Oh, I know. But Mr. Rothkopf said he got the proofs of the new multilingual brochure back from the printer," said Layla, grateful for this last-minute development James had mentioned when they'd talked on the phone last night. "I thought I'd come in a little early and review them." Mackie hesitated. "I know the printer wanted final approval today," she said. "Otherwise, we'll miss this week's print run. It'd be great to get the brochures done so we could have them on hand for the fundraiser." Mackie looked at her questioningly. "You know the Rothkopf Foundation event? Mr. Rothkopf and James told me about the Girls' Education Initiative. Even though it's for a cause and not the gallery, it can't hurt to have the brochures on hand."
"Come in then,"
Mackie grudgingly let her enter.
"I will get the proofs from his office."
"Oh, no worries. If they're on his desk, I'll just work there since he's out." Layla moved toward the door that led to the corridor of offices.
"Forgive me," said Mackie, pushing past her. "It is better, I think, if you work in your own office."
He strode down the hall and entered Bennett's office, returning a couple of seconds later with a file containing the printer proofs. He thrust them at her. Layla staggered backward from the unexpected force of the file handoff.
"Thanks," she said, smiling through clenched teeth. "I'll get right to it."
She went into her tiny office and stared at the proof pages, not reading a word. James's appointment wasn't long, and the Ministry of Antiquities was mere blocks away. She had less than an hour to get Mackie out and to leave herself ample time to search Bennett's office. Time for Plan B. She allowed 5 minutes to pass, then returned to the main gallery and approached Mackie, who was polishing a glass display case with surprising gentleness.
"Hey, Mackie," said Layla, trying to sound concerned. "I just looked out the window and saw a couple of guys outside near the delivery door. It kind of looked like they were inspecting the lock."
Mackie looked out the back window.
"I see no one."
"Maybe they're still in the area?"
She wrung her hands.
"I'm worried they're casing the place."
She went on to describe the two young guys in soccer jerseys who had followed her before.
"Our security camera by the back door should show them," said Mackie.
"Please, can't you look? I'm scared they might come back. What if they're armed?"
This idea seemed to rouse Mackie. He unlocked a desk drawer, took out a handgun, and left the gallery, his stride brisk and efficient.
Layla waited until his heavy footsteps receded down the stairs, and she heard the main door to the building slam shut. Then she dashed down the hall to Bennett's office. The wild goose chase she'd just sent Mackie on wouldn't last long. She went to the computer. A quick glance at the program files confirmed her suspicion that Bennett used state-of-the-art inventory management software, all of it password-protected. She opened the desk drawers, one after another. She found heartburn medication, aspirin, sesame seed snacks, rubber stress balls, and a gag gift of a Zen garden in a box. Clues all pointing to acid reflux and stress, but not shady dealings. No paperwork was filed in the desk. He was probably smarter than that. She turned her attention to a bookshelf behind the desk. It was lined with books on antiquities and catalogs for auction houses around the world, stacked in no particular order, sticky notes marking pages. She saw some blank letterhead and envelopes with the company name Global Relics LLC and an invitation to an upcoming event at the Egyptian Museum. Behind one row of books, though, a corner of a page stuck out, as if it had slipped behind the books or been hidden behind them. Layla pulled out the paper, a handwritten note on cream heavy-laid paper, with a familiar blue monogram swirled across the top. She'd seen that stationery in Noor Ghaffar's office. Dear Bennett, thank you for procuring the beautiful jade scarab amulet necklace. It made the perfect present for Jehan's birthday. I know it was no small feat on such short notice. And as ever, I am grateful for the extra care you have shown me in locating such unique pieces. If ever I can return the favor, do let me know. I am at your service. Very truly yours, Noor Ghaffar. Each sentence of the letter came as a jolt. Rothkopf had procured the amulet necklace on short notice. He had found Noor other unique pieces, which was likely a euphemism for illegal. Calm down, Layla told herself, trying to steady her trembling hands. She closed her eyes for a moment and pictured the exquisite jade scarab necklace Jehan had worn at the Coriander Gallery party, and again in Geneva. Then she photographed Noor's letter with her FBI phone and carefully replaced it. She ran her hand behind all the books, fishing for more papers, finding nothing. Then there was a section of 10 pages filled out in pencil, names and figures in columns. Layla's heart pounded with excitement as she flipped through the pages and read the entries. Miriam Goldman, Judean miniature oil lamps, $450. In parentheses, $45,000. Marco de la Cruz, Valdivian stone abstract idols, $400. In parentheses, $4,000. Kiyoshi Tanaka, Roman mosaic Aphrodite, $375. In parentheses, $37,500. Noor Ghaffar, jade scarab amulet, $250. In parentheses, $25,000. The names went on and on. Many were known to her from Pierce's Wall, or they were people she'd met through Farwadi. Following each name were items and double prices. She thought about the articles Pierce had given her and the various ways shady dealers cooked their books. Bennett could be recording official prices for his records versus the actual amount of money that changed hands. If collectors appeared to have bought items of relatively low value, they would be less likely to face any questioning. Is that an $18,000 Aramean incantation bowl? Why, no, it's a tchotchke, see? I paid only $400. After 10 pages, the notes ended. The rest of the notebook was empty. Deliberately shutting off her emotions, as efficiently as a machine, Layla took out her work phone and took a picture of every page.
As she was finishing, she heard the main door to the gallery open and shut. Heavy footsteps thudded on the gallery floor, then down the corridor. Mackie was back sooner than she had expected. And she was still in Bennett's office. There was no way to explain what she was doing there. It was Geneva all over again. No. Geneva had prepared her for this. She'd survived that close call, and she could do better. She grabbed her phone from her tote bag and frantically texted Pierce. Call front desk Rothkopf Gallery. She needed a distraction, something to halt Mackie's inexorable progress toward Bennett's office.
Layla,
she heard Mackie call, as he tapped on her own office door a few doors down.
Are you here?
Urgent. Need distraction. Call Rothkopf Gallery now. The phone did not ring. Pierce didn't respond.
Shit, Pierce, come on, look at your texts, Layla muttered.
Even if Pierce was working at her cover job at the embassy, there was no excuse for ignoring this text.
Layla?
Mackie was now checking James's studio and calling for her there. He was one door away from Bennett's office. Swearing under her breath, Layla clutched her bag and the useless cell phone to her chest, rotating. She looked for a window to leap out, a fire escape, anything. The gallery door opened again, the soft, electronic buzz signaling a newcomer.
Hello? Is anyone here?
A deep male voice called out. Layla detected a German accent. Whoever it was, Layla wanted to run out there and wrap her arms around him for his incredible timing. Already she could hear Mackie's footsteps as he hurried down the corridor toward the main gallery. She counted to three, then silently eased open the door to Bennett's office and turned to close it behind her. As she looked up, one hand still on the doorknob, she saw Mackie at the opposite end of the hall. Their eyes locked.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Heligers. Audio editing by Kaylin West. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.